And now I'm joined on the line by Aileen Hickey, who is CEO with ParentLine. Good morning to Aileen.
Good morning, Debbie. How are you?
Not too bad. Now, today we're going to talk a little bit about the work you do within ParentLine. I know you've been on ERFM many a times, but just to kind of refresh people's, I suppose, memories and get it out there exactly the work that you do and who you're there to help. So tell us a little bit about ParentLine.
Certainly. Thanks for having me on. So ParentLine, we're a national helpline, first of all. We deal with parents of children of any and all ages, so from parents with, you know, infants, parents who may be dealing with postnatal depression, right through to parents with adult children. So it's parents of any and all ages, because, you know, all ages offer different challenges, as every parent knows. So, you know, it's just what if you know, it's whatever issue is concerning a parent at a particular time. We're a helpline. We have about 50 volunteers who man the helpline. Mm-hmm. Our lines are open from 10 in the morning until 9 in the evening from Monday to Thursday, and 10 in the morning until 7 in the evening on a Friday. That's actually neat. We used to finish at 4 o'clock on a Friday, but our volunteers are now good enough that they're staying on the lines until 7 o'clock on a Friday evening, because we saw that there was calls coming in that we wanted to reach. We take about 6,000 calls a year, and we are totally confidential, non-judgmental, and we offer support, information and guidance, as I say, on any and all issues. Our number is 01873500. I can throw that out again to you at the end. Yeah. And we have a very good website, so for any parent who is wondering, you know, the issues that we deal with and what sort of issues come up, if they look at parentline.ie, as I say, it's an excellent website and it's a great source of information, and we have a lot of information on it on the principal issues that we deal with, which would be postnatal depression, child to parent violence, school refusal, eating disorders, anxiety, but as I say, it's the issues that concern parents. And I suppose the benefit of having a service and a charity like we are is that, you know, parents, a lot of time when they have an issue with a child, or if the child has an issue, you know, a lot of parents carry a kind of a sense of almost shame and embarrassment in relation to, you know, in relation to these issues. So I suppose the important thing is that we provide a listening ear and an empathetic ear to parents in a confidential manner. So, you know, a lot of issues aren't necessarily something that a parent wants to discuss down at the school gate or with their friends or their family or their neighbours or anything else, because, you know, I suppose, you know, families and friends remember, and you know, 10 years down the line when everything is good and everything is settled, you don't necessarily want them to remember the issue that you dealt with 10 years earlier with, you know, little Johnny or Anna or whoever she was.
I know.
The great thing. And that is the difficult thing for parents, is that, you know, a lot of parents, I think, you know, in the face of a lot of issues, they do feel kind of powerless, and I think they feel that sometimes they feel when they're bringing us that, you know, there's a sense of failure, that they've failed in their role as a parent, even though they haven't, and it generally isn't their fault. But, you know, as a parent, everyone just wants their child to be happy, and it doesn't always work out like that because children have issues.
Exactly. And you know what, that's the one thing, you just want your children to be as happy. As a parent of four, well, they're not children now anymore, they're grown adults and young adults, but you know, I always thought to myself, okay, you know, we have to really worry about the kids until they're 18 and get them into school and look after them and do that. I find it much harder now. The worry of them going out, the worry of them, you know, how they're getting home from town and going out and going away on holidays on their own. I find that an awful lot harder, because when they were younger, could put them to bed and know they were safe and in their bed. I find this stage of rare, and where I should be relaxing, and they're in like 19 and up to 25, I'm worrying more now about them.
Well, absolutely, and that's because, you know, it is the older age, you literally are a parent for life. Mm. And you know, the worry and the concerns don't go away from the minute they're born right through. You know, you're always going to be concerned about what's happening with your children, whether they're adult children or not. So about 10% of our calls would be from parents whose you know, children or adult children, it may be that the children are still living at home. It may be that the children, the adult children, have had to move back into the family home, or it just may be that they're concerned about an issue to do with their adult child. But we would take about 10%, probably even slightly higher than that, of our calls in relation to adult children. And it is actually, you know, exactly what you said. I suppose there was a certain sense of certainty when, you know, when kids are young and you can put them into their cots and put them into their bed and turn out the light and, you know, close the door and you feel they're safe for the night. Without having the concerns of, you know, where are they, what time are they going to come in?
And,
you
know, I mean, I hate this. I really do. Yeah, it's so hard.
I know, because I have some adult children myself. Yeah. So, you know, I think I got more sleep when I was waking up to feed them than I do now, worrying about where they are.
Oh, I'm just calling my kids, oh, Mom, you're just a weirdo. You're the only mother that keeps in. I just check, where are you? Are you in a taxi? Just let me know when you're in the taxi and you're coming home safe. I'm a worrier, and I am a worrier, and I just wish I wasn't. I wish I didn't worry as much, but I just need to know, you know, once they're home and they're, I hear that the key coming out the door.
Just at least send me a text and let me know, you know, where you are now and what your ETA is like when you expect to get home.
Yeah, and you get that. I'll be home. I'm on my way home, and then 3 hours later, and they're still not home. But do you know, as you said, I think you're a parent. Well, you are a parent for life, and I think you're just, if you're a worrier, I just wish I didn't worry as much. Like my kids say to me, we're adults now, and I said, yeah, well, act like adults and just answer me and say when you're coming home. But Aileen, have you seen a rise in calls since? I mean, we know COVID was tough for everybody, but I think it was very tough on our younger people as well. Have you seen a rise in call to your helpline?
Well, we first of all, when I say we take about 6,000 calls a year now, that's more or less a doubling of our calls in the last 3 years. So since the beginning of COVID, you know, our calls have gone up and gone up and gone up. Now, you can't put everything at the door of COVID, but COVID certainly exacerbated the issues a lot of children were having and the issues a lot of parents were having with their children and the concerns of parents. So, you know, we saw last year a rise in the number of calls we were getting in relation to school refusal. That was, you know, those we saw a rise in those call rates even when the physical schools were closed, because, you know, a child doesn't necessarily have to be going to a physical school to refuse to go to school. So even when children last year were on online educational platforms, a lot of parents had difficulties getting their children to log on or move to the kitchen table or get out of the bed or that sort of thing. And this year we have seen a doubling in our calls in relation to anxiety in children. Now, again, some of that anxiety then feeds into school refusal. The thing about anxiety is, you know, I mean, you know, all adults and children feel anxious and worried at times, and it's a very normal and natural occurrence. But I think it can become overwhelming, and, you know, it can become, you know, kind of defining. I think, again, without putting everything at the door of COVID, the problem seems to have been, from what we hear on the helplines, that a lot of children, particularly secondary school children, have found it difficult over the last couple of years to reintegrate themselves into the school system, to reintegrate themselves back into their friend groups and their social circles. You know, because actually, I think the biggest, what the experts will tell you is that one of the biggest causes of childhood anxiety is loss. And, you know, what children and teenagers in Ireland suffered during COVID, during the 2.5 years of COVID, was lost, because, you know, they lost their, you know, they lost their school and their connectivity and, you know, their after school activities and their ability to be with friends and all the rest of it because of all the restrictions that were placed upon them. Now, COVID, I'm not taking COVID away from anybody. COVID was difficult for everybody, but, you know, I think sometimes it mightn't be recognised, you know, the huge issues that it brought on in children, and that they you know, they're not necessarily, I mean, that's nothing to do with actually getting physical COVID or you know, any of the, you know, with actually having COVID. This is just to do with the restrictions that were put in place because of COVID. And I think, you know, that has been maybe a little bit overlooked or underappreciated, because, you know, they lost physical communication, they lost a lot of their interactions, and as they lost, many of them lost their friend groups, and many of them lost a respect for education. So I think parents have had a huge difficulty in, you know, trying to support their children with this. And, you know, as a result, some children don't attend school any longer or have moved schools. So, you know, anxieties, as I say, we've seen a doubling in the calls in relation to childhood anxiety this year, and that's from parents.
Yeah.
I mean, we can only report on what we hear on the helplines, but we've had a doubling in the number of calls in relation to parents concerned that their children are displaying signs of anxiety. And as I say, you know, again, you know, there's plenty of signs of childhood anxiety, and there, you know, there are many, and they're varied like everything else. So it might be that children aren't sleeping well, or they're sleeping too long, or they won't get out of bed, or they find it hard to concentrate, or they might be angry, or they might be irritable, might have a lack of confidence. Mm-hmm. Or they might be avoiding normal everyday activities like seeing their friends or going out in public or going to school. But, you know, one way or the other, that's what it comes down to. And I suppose the difficulty is, Debbie, as well, is that, you know, it's very difficult in Ireland to get, well, probably across Europe and across the world, but it certainly is difficult in Ireland for parents to access the help and supports they need for their children in relation to the mental health services. Because, you know, there's such a demand for the mental health services that inevitably it means going on a waiting list. And when a parent is looking for help, the last thing they need to hear is you know, we'll be back to you in 6 months' time. Mm-hmm. Because if you're looking for help now, you're looking for help now. You're not looking for help in 6 months' time, and that can be, you know, make things even worse.
But has that been improved at all? Because I've heard that so many times with the interviews I do, like there can be people at dire straits and they need the help right now, especially young adults like that after COVID, the anxiety, yeah, as you mentioned. But like that, they are put on waiting lists. So, like, have you seen any improvement in them getting help straight away and avoiding these waiting lists?
But again, we can only report on what we hear. But what we're hearing is that parents are very frustrated because, you know, they feel, I suppose, that they're being moved from Billy to Jack, and, you know, directed from one service to the other. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm not trying to throw this at the door, you know, at the blame of anyone. And I know the mental health services are struggling themselves and under the weight of it all. But what parents need is more access, faster access, if they're going to be able to help and support their child. Because, like everything else, you know, the sooner you get help, you know, the sooner you intervene and early intervention and all the rest of it, it makes a huge difference. You know, learning of a delay for 6 months or longer, you know, certainly isn't helpful and can make, you know, things a lot worse. So, you know, the service provision has to, I suppose it's easy and trite for me to say that we need the service provision and supports there, but we do. That is what we need.
Yeah.
I mean, they just need quicker and faster access, because if we're going to have the best possible outcomes, you know, for our kids. Because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you can talk about adult children, but actually childhood is something that's very finite. You know, childhood officially does end at 18, and all every child wants, and all every parent wants, is that their child has, you know, the best chance that it possible, you know, to become the best possible adult that they can, and to reach adulthood as safely and as securely as possible. And they need support there for that to happen.
Maybe now, because I think a lot of children have been affected with this, with COVID, and the fear, I think, of probably losing a loved one. I know a relation of mine, he's 8 years old, and he has a terrible fear that because of COVID, one of his parents is going to die, and he can't seem to kind of, he's changed, his whole personality has changed. He isn't the child he used to be. He has this fear that he can't get rid of it. It just won't go out of his mind that he's going to lose somebody because of COVID, and they're going to die from COVID. So maybe there should be a thing put in place in schools now, like a counselling for children. I know a lot of schools have that in there, but, you know, something immediate for children if they are kind of very affected by the way, I suppose, how COVID affected them, that they have someone to talk
absolutely
to.
Absolutely. I mean, that's exactly it, Debbie. So, I mean, there is a need for more counselling, or for counselling, because now every school has counselling. So for more counselling and for counselling, and for it to be very nuanced counselling. I mean, you know, I mean, again, nobody needs to see a queue outside the door, you know, for a counsellor and for their friends to be passing them by as they queue to see the counsellor. So it has to be done in a very nuanced way, so that, you know, the child or the teenager is able to see a counsellor, you know, without it being, you know, a very overt thing. So I just think that, you know, that, I mean, again, you know, we only report on what we hear, but parents would certainly appreciate if there was more available availability to counselling and more counselling there.
Exactly.
Or any counselling.
So if somebody rings you in wanting help, you will advise them and give them numbers to ring somebody else. Is it like a helpline for...
We stay away from the word advice. So what we do is we're a listening service primarily. We listen, we support, we offer guidance and we offer information. So we will try and signpost to wherever we think is best suited for them. That they don't always need that. A lot of parents, when they ring, they just want the support and the listening ear, because they say the important thing is for them to be able to talk about the issue that they're having with their child, because they possibly can't talk about it to anybody else, because, you know, as I say, because there can be a sense of shame or embarrassment about, you know, what's going on in a, you know, within a family home in terms of the children's behaviour. So a lot of the time, most of the time actually, when the parents are ringing us, it is literally just that they can get the support and the information and the guidance from us. And a lot of our parents would be repeat callers, I suppose, you know, and that, you know, they might, they once they get support, you know, once they might ring back again in a month's time. And, you know, so we get repeat callers, we get first time callers, we get previous callers, but, you know, we're there, and I mean, and we will provide the best guidance and support that we can. And if that is that they need to go down another avenue, then we will certainly signpost them to that as well. Now, we do have some support programs ourselves that we put in place. So we also deal with something called child to parent violence, which is essentially where children, primarily children aged between the ages of kind of 12 and 18, are being abusive to their parents, verbally abusive, emotionally abusive, coercive control, controlling behaviours, school refusal, and sometimes physical abuse. So as I say, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's, you know, a 15-year-old throwing his mother up against the fridge door every night, but it can be verbal abuse or it can be emotional abuse. But when a parent is dealing with this and that kind of abuse is being directed at them in their own home, which, by the way, is another form of domestic violence or domestic abuse.
Yeah.
We have a fantastic program. It's called the Nonviolent Resistance Program. Again, any parent can find it on the website. It's a program that we put in place ourselves with our own. We have special NVR trained facilitators, and we put the program in place. It's an 8-week program whereby we bring the parent through the Nonviolent Resistance Program. Essentially, it's all about changing the behaviour and the reactions of the parent towards what the child is doing, because that brings about a behavioural change in the child. So it's about trying to change the reaction and the responses of the parent to the behaviours that are being directed at them. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, again, like everything else, you know, most children know exactly what buttons to press to get people going. So this is about, you know, instead of pouring oil on the fire to try and take things down, you know, a good few notches, and to try and change the behaviours. And, you know, I mean, again, it's not a magic wand and it's not a magic bean, but we have had enormous success from the programme, and we wish to have, you know, hundreds of parents contacting us after the programme to say it has changed the behaviour in their family and the atmosphere in their family home, and it has, you know, brought them all in a new direction. So it's a fantastic programme. The only thing I will say is, you know, it's a programme that needs a lot of commitment from the parent, and, you know, we have to find the time and a facilitator to do it. So we might have a short waiting list, but when I say short, as in like 2 or 3 weeks for a parent to get on the programme. But for any parent who feels that that behaviour is happening in their house, they can look at the Parentline website and look under the Nonviolent Resistance Programme. And as I say, it's a fantastic programme, and it has supported hundreds of parents to get through what is a very difficult issue for any parent.
Now, I know I heard something on the radio there last week about a rise in elder people being abused by their children, but these children are older. Now, I know it's I did something about it last year, and it's actually quite frightening to see these poor people who are in their latter years, and, you know, 70s and 80s, been abused by their own children, physically abused, and like their pensions taken off them and everything. So, as you say, Parentline, you're a parent until the day you die when you have children. Would you be able to support these older people as well if they're going through something like that, and guide them to
Where they can go for help? Well, we have supported parents of adult children, and it's just, I suppose, you know, we do try and prioritise the parents of teenage children, because it's something that needs to be dealt with as quickly as possible. But we do support also parents of adult children.
Advice, yeah. Now, tell me, how long has Parentline been going?
This year was our 40th birthday. They're in May, so not every charity or organisation lasts for 40 years.
No.
So, I think we've kind of calculated it up that it has probably helped and supported about 150,000 parents over those 40 years. So it really is a fantastic organisation. I mean, the Parentline volunteers are the most amazing group of people you would ever meet. I mean, they each give, apart from the intensive training that we put them through, they each give 3 hours a week to Parentline. There's no issue that they haven't already heard, and there's no problem that they haven't dealt with already. I mean, they're just the most fantastic group of giving, generous people, who are, we do a lot of continuous training. So, they would have a lot of information and training in relation to any and all parenting issues.
Brilliant. And are you government funded, or do you have to do fundraising to keep going?
We're primarily funded by TUSLA, but we do fundraise as well to meet the shortfall, and there is a shortfall, so we do have to fundraise.
So we have
an Angel Make button on the website if anyone is interested in supporting us, and we have to run a couple of fundraising events a year, as I say, to meet the shortfall and to keep the lights on.
Well going for 40 years, that's some achievement. And have you any thing coming up for Christmas? Are you selling Christmas cards or anything like that to help?
We're not actually we don't go down that end of it. As I say, we have a couple of big fundraising events over the year, but we don't go down that end of it.
But you still have to keep kind of doing a little bit to, as you say, you get some government funding, but you need to keep it going as well. And 40 years, as I said, is an achievement, and well done. But Aileen, listen, thanks for taking the time out to talk to us today on Lifeline. It's been a pleasure. I'll give out the number again at the end of the show and the web address.
That'd be great, Debbie. I'd really appreciate that, to get the number out there. And as I say, our lines are open from 10 in the morning to 9 in the evening, Monday to Thursday, 10 in the morning until 7 p.m. On a Friday evening. And if anyone does need help over the weekend, we do have a facility where people can leave their number and they will get a call back.
Brilliant. Thanks a million, Aileen. Thanks for talking to us today.
Thanks.
Talk to you,
Debbie,
again very soon. If I don't, have a great Christmas.
Yeah, and you too, mate.
Okay.
Well, it's a pleasure to have your turn.
Thank you. Thanks, Aileen. Bye bye. And that was Aileen Hickey there, who is CEO of Parentline. Once again, that number is 01873350, or you can go on to parentline.ie.
Community radio for North East Dublin, 90.3. 90.3. Near FM.